Come to order, then clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barker Barnhart. Berger. Berger Beyer. Beyer Bonamici. Boone. Boone Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Buckley Burley. Burley Butler. Cameron. Cameron Cannon. Cannon Clem. Cowan. Cowan Dallum. Dingfelder. Dingfelder Chris Edwards. Chris Edwards David Edwards. Esquivel. Esquivel Flores. Flores Galizio. Gerard. Gelzer. Gelzer Gilliam. Gilliam Gilman. Gilman Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Hannah Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Jensen Comp. Comp Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Crummel Lim. Lim McPherson. McPherson Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Morgan Nathanson. Nathanson Nelson. Nolan. Nolan Olson. Olson Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Roblin Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum Schaffler. Schaffler Scott. Shields. Shields Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Barker. Berger. Beyer. Buckley. Burley. Cameron. Cannon. Dingfelder. Esquivel. Flores. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Hannah. Jensen. Comp. Crummel. Morgan. Nathanson. Nolan. Olson. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Shields. Excused. Boquist. Butler. Minnis. Scott.
Colleagues, while we're waiting for a quorum, I thought I'll go over how the agenda is going to proceed. So we were in third reading of Senate bills when we recessed of House bills. We are going to temporarily advance, if there are no objections, we'll advance to third reading of Senate bills. We'll do those Senate bills. Then we will come back and follow the list that you have on your yellow sheet. We'll come back to the consent calendar bill and then to the third reading of House bills. That'll probably take us a fair ways forward. So while we're waiting for a quorum, we'll just hang in here for a few minutes. Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the order of business of third reading of Senate bills. The chair asks unanimous consent to place Senate Bill 5511 and 5512A, for which we do not have the carriers in the room, at the end of the list of Senate bills. Is there an objection to the first list of Senate bills? Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. So we'll now be proceeding with Senate Bill 5527. Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 5527, relating to financial administration of the Board of Medical Examiners and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5527A. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought I was going to get a chance to get on Social Security before I had a chance to read this pony. Senate Bill 5527 is the budget bill for the Board of Medical Examiners. The Board regulates the practice of medicine in Oregon through licensing and disciplinary programs. The agency is funded with revenue generated from licenses, registration, and examination fees. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved an other funds budget of $8.5 million and 35.3 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget provides for a new licensing and case management system and adds two positions to improve processing time and manage increasing investigation and compliance workloads. The approved budget also enhances the agency's efforts to rehabilitate licensees when possible by expanding the diversion program to include mental health disorders. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5527 as amended.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Morgan, she does not wish to close. Those opinion the bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, votes aye. Representative Barnhart, votes aye. Representative Crummell, While we're checking on him, I'll go ahead to Representative Nathanson. Representative Nathanson was excused for business. Representative Shields votes aye. Representative Hanna votes aye. We're checking to see if Representative Crummell is excused on committee. He's off the floor. Senate Bill 5527A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 5534, relating to the financial administration of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5534A. Representative Garrard. Household Standards. Okay, the House will come back to order. Clerk, read the bill. And I'll read it again so people know where it is. It's already been officially read, so I'll just remind folks, since I know we're a little bit out of rhythm here, this is Senate Bill 5534A, and it will be carried by Representative Garrard. And you are on. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My apologies to my colleagues. Senate Bill 5534 is the budget bill for the Psychiatric Security Review Board. The board maintains jurisdiction over people found to be, quote, guilty except for insanity of a crime. Effective July 1, 2007, the board will also have jurisdiction over juveniles found responsible except for insanity, who have a serious mental condition or who present a danger to themselves or others. The board's primary purpose is to protect the public through the ongoing review of the progress of those placed under its jurisdiction and determination of their appropriate placement. Placement options include commitment to a secure forensic ward at the state hospital, conditional release to a highly structured and supervised program in the community, or discharge from jurisdiction. Agency operations are funded with general fund. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $1,005,000 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget provides increased funding for an additional 15 hearing days for the adult panel. Increasing the number of hearing days is expected to increase the percentage of hearings scheduled within statutory time frames from 74 to 90%. The approved budget also includes funding for the newly created juvenile panel. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5534A as amended.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion that Senate Bill 5534 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Senate Bill 5534A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Senate Bill 5541, relating to financial administration of the Department of Veterans Affairs, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5541A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5541 is the budget bill for the Department of Veterans Affairs. The department has three programs. It provides mortgage loans to qualified veterans, provides claims counseling and processing, as well as conservatorship services to veterans, and it maintains the veterans home located in the Dalles. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $654 million and 111 positions. $608 million of the budget is non-limited other funds, principally for making loans and repaying debt. The balance is for operating and other expenses of the department. The committee approved an operating budget that maintains the department's services to veterans. It also approved continuation of one-time funding for veteran services that were part of the veterans package last session. Specifically, the committee provided general fund for educational benefits and an emergency assistance program. Additionally, the committee maintained general fund support for certain qualified national veterans service organizations at the essential budget level and increased funding to counties to provide ongoing, enhanced, and expanded services to veterans. The committee felt that these general fund distributions should be put into the budget bill. Distribution of that funding continues to be a contentious issue, and the committee approved a budget note directing the department to work with county veterans services offices to develop a distribution formula that achieves the best value for Oregon veterans. The committee reviewed the agency's performance measures and added the best practices performance measure for boards and commissions. We did that because the Veterans Advisory Committee has veto authority over the director's appointment. The committee recommends approval of Senate Bill 5541A.
Further discussion, Representative Krimmel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question. I wonder if the carrier...
Question of the
yield.
Carriers. Carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you, Mr. Speaker. In looking through this, I see that there's some things around the Veterans Home. My question is, was there discussion in committee about the about a second Veterans Home, and was there any kind of placeholder put in place for future funding for a second Veterans Home?
I'd like to thank the good representative from Wilsonville for that question. There was discussion in committee about general fund dollars going towards a refurbishment of the current Veterans Home and potential seed money for a second Veterans Home. The request from the retired Adjutant General Austin was for $300,000. The committee considered that request and decided to put in a $1 placeholder for the time being.
Follow-up question,
is Carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you for that answer, but your answer spawned a second question. So under capital construction, it says recommended an inclusion of a placeholder capital construction limitation of the Oregon Veterans Home guest house and for the Oregon Veterans Home multipurpose area in House Bill 5006, but it doesn't say anything about in here about a second Veterans Home. So is it contemplated that this guest house and multipurpose area would go at the current place in the Dalles, or that that would go with a second Veterans Home built somewhere else in the state?
At present, there is no placeholder for the second planned Veterans Home. We did not discuss where that construction would take place, if it occurred at all.
Clarification, Mr. Speaker? Madam Speaker?
Clarification, does the carrier yield? I think he does. Go ahead with your clarification, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. So, so the placeholder is in for the multipurpose area and a guest house at the current Veterans Home in the Dalles, and not for any other potential sites that might be for, used for a second Veterans Home.
That is correct, Representative.
Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I noticed that there's two counties that the distribution is missing for, one being Marion here and the other one, the good representative from West Salem probably would be interested in Polk, and maybe you could just explain to us why those two counties missed the distribution. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Question of the carrier, please.
Representative.
I'm answering a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer the good representative's question regarding the lack of apparent funding for two counties, those counties do not have county veterans offices, and so the funding is dedicated to those county services. I yield to the second question.
Okay, Representative Dallin, now please go ahead and answer your question. The carrier has yielded.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The question is...
I should have said ask your question.
The service officer for Gillum, Wheeler, and Sherman counties, was there discussion about how the three counties would be covered with a service officer?
Thank you for that question, good representative. No, there was no discussion regarding how county services would be provided to veterans within those counties.
Follow-up question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Then that becomes an administrative decision for the Veterans Affairs people to make?
To the best of my knowledge, yes. It becomes an administrative decision on the part of the Veterans Services Department.
Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? Representative Edwards,
no,
do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 5541A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 5545A be moved to the bottom of the current list. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 432 relating to ship breaking and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 432B. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 432B is not a budget bill. It comes to you via the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy. It received some final touch-ups over on the Senate side, as the committee intended, and now it stands ready for final approval, which is going to make my community very happy. This bill developed as a result of an interest of a company that had hoped to locate in Newport and begin a ship-breaking operation in Yaquina Bay. That idea was resoundingly opposed by many who care very deeply about the health of the estuary in the bay. As a result of what we learned from that experience, Senate Bill 432B now makes it clear that such a shipbreaking operation in Oregon waters will be allowed only in dry dock facilities. It will protect Oregon waterways from the byproducts of such in-water operation, hazardous and toxic substances potentially released during the dismantling, invasive species that might be introduced into local waters, and potentially detrimental impacts to the coastal water quality. While this bill encompasses the ORS definition, waters of the states, in practicality it is going to impact only the ports that could be accessed by the very large vessels. So we're not talking about the inland waterways. The legislation applies only to vessels over 200 gross tons, and it does provide an exemption for a shipwreck that the Department of State Lands might determine is impractical to move before dismantling or cleanup efforts for the smaller abandoned boats such as the abandoned fishing boats that we find in the bay, and we're working on cleaning up. So in cases that it would involve a large vessel shipwreck, that decision would be made in consultation with the Coast Guard, the ship owners, and any other appropriate parties as to whether or not that vessel could actually be moved to a dry dock facility. I think we've really addressed some important issues that we need to look at in the state before we have to face this kind of a discussion again. I believe it's a good bill, and I urge your yes vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
After they left Newport, the discussion focused on Coos Bay and whether we would have shipbreaking in Coos Bay. We do have some shipbreaking that will be taking place in Coos Bay. It's out on the beach. It's the new Carissa. I'm not entirely... It is addressed in the bill. I'm not entirely happy that we're spending the money on taking it out. It's fine with me where it is. But that being said, we really do need to make sure... there was a discussion of bringing part of the naval fleet that's down in San Francisco and dragging it up the coast and dropping them off at our port to take them apart. Just bringing them is a problem because of all the stuff that's on the outside of those ships, and it's really a concern to us. But more than that, when they start breaking them, it becomes a real problem for the environment. If you don't get them up out of the water, as other countries have found around the world where shipbreaking is happening. So I really encourage you to vote aye on this great bill. Thanks.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mrs. Speaker. Madam Speaker, I'm sorry. I, too, rise in support of this bill. This is a good way to get family wage jobs and keep the environment clean, and what's badly needed in our coastal areas, and I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Cowan, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The good representatives and I actually shared the new Carissa. Part of it ended up with Representative Roblin. Part of it visited me briefly. That might be the reason there's some attention to shipwrecks in this bill. But we do need this one. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Colleagues, the next bill will be 5511, and after that, 5512. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 432B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5511, relating to financial administration of the Employment Relations Board, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5511. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 5511 is the budget for the Employment Relations Board. The mission of the Employment Relations Board is to resolve disputes concerning labor relations, primarily for state and local government public sector employers and employees in the state. The agency provides, conducts, and certifies representation elections, provides mediation services, holds hearings and issues opinions, and provides an appeals forum to the three-member board. Your Ways and Means Committee recommends a budget of $1,661,913 general fund, $1,619,712 other funds, and 13.0 FTE for the Employment Relations Board. Two administrative law judges are responsible for an average of 137.6 cases filed annually. The agency faces a backlog in hearing cases and issuing orders, which takes about 380 days from the date of filing. The Ways and Means Committee recommends the addition of a permanent full-time administrative law judge position to decrease the backlog and speed processing of cases awaiting decisions. The Ways and Means Committee recommends that this new position be funded by an increase in general fund appropriation to the agency and by other funds revenues generated by from increases in state agency assessments and the fee charged to file an answer to an unfair labor practice claim. This recommended budget assumes the passage of a related fee legislation. The additional position creates the expectation that the agency improve its performance related to the number of days necessary for the agency's hearings division to hear cases and process complaints in a timely manner. The agency expects availability and processing times in the hearings division to improve 30% by 2009 as a result of the new administrative law judge position. The Ways and Means Committee recommends approval of Senate Bill 5511.
Further discussion? Representative Byer, do you wish to close?
No.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. Senate Bill 5511, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5512, relating to financial administration, State Department of Energy appropriated money and declared an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5512A. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Your Ways and Means Committee recommends a budget of $185,437,404.88 full-time equivalent positions for the Oregon Department of Energy. This budget provides an additional 9.98 FTE to accommodate ongoing work and additional duties related to research and implementation of multiple energy work plans and task force recommendations, school energy efficiency audits and projects associated with public purpose funds, increased activity in the department's tax credit programs, and additional demand for expertise in specific energy technologies such as solar and wave energy. Three of these positions are limited duration. All of the additional positions will be funded from other funds. The following budget note pertaining to the governor's energy savings goal is included in the department's budget. The Department of Energy is encouraged to contract with state agencies for energy audits that would be paid for from other funds revenue with the goal of generating additional energy efficiency for those state agencies. Should this effort be successful, the department may return to the emergency board to seek limited duration positions and expenditure limitation to conduct those audits on a fee-for-service basis. The Ways and Means Committee recommends $1.5 million for payment on the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry loan and a technical adjustment transferring $5,800 to the Office of the Governor for per diem expenses related to the Energy Facility Siting Council, which is housed in the Office of the Governor. Performance measure targets were adjusted to reflect the productivity of new positions and actual improvements in return on investment for a number of agency programs. The Ways and Means Committee recommends approval of Senate Bill 5512 as amended.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question. I wonder if the carrier would yield.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. What I'm looking at is on page 3 or 4 of the SMS, and you talked about the budget note there of the department contracting with state agencies for energy audits. I'm assuming that those are audits that the Department of Energy is doing. What role, if any, would the Energy Trust have in performing some of these audits for the state agencies?
They do not. The Energy Trust of Oregon does not play any role in audits for state agencies. They do audits at public schools.
Clarification, Madam Speaker.
Clarification. The Secretary yields. She does.
The Energy Trust only does.
And just a clarification, Madam Speaker. The funding comes from the Energy Trust to do audits of public schools. The department staff conducts the audit. The funding comes from the Oregon Energy Trust. So this is a completely separate program. The budget note refers to audits for state agencies.
Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close?
No.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes no. Senate Bill 5512A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5545, relating to State Financial Administration, appropriating money, declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5545A, Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I have another exciting bill. Senate Bill 5545A provides supplemental general fund appropriations for five agencies and modifies the other funds of federal funds. The other funds or federal funds expenditure limitations for several other agencies so that necessary budget execution actions can be completed in the current biennium. The Judicial Department receives a $1.7 million general fund appropriation for increased costs for sign and spoken language interpreters in the court system. The Public Defense Services Commission receives $1.1 million of general fund appropriation for higher than anticipated caseload and cost per case expenses in the public defense program. The Department of Justice receives $444,000 in general fund appropriation for the payment of legal costs in protecting the state's interest in the master settlement agreement payments. Governor's Office receives $46,200 general fund appropriation for the replacement of failing office equipment. The Department of Forestry receives a $300,000 general fund appropriations for the eradication of sudden oak death and a $12.4 million other funds expenditure limitation for protection from fire costs related to the 2006 fire season. Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development receives $120,000 other funds expenditure limitation increase for the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps and a decrease of the same amount from other department expenditures. The Department of Higher Ed receives $3 million other fund expenditure limitation increases for higher than budgeted expenditures in the education and general services program. The Department of Transportation receives a total of $20.9 million other funds and $2.1 million federal funds expenditure limitation increases for a variety of expenses related to emergency repairs and expedited projects. The Military Department receives $2.6 million other funds expenditure limitation increases for revenues received from Louisiana for the agency's Katrina response. The department also receives a transfer of $154,000 general fund from an existing appropriation for the cost of annual resident hunting and angling licenses that will not be expended to the Emergency Financial Assistance Fund to offset a projected deficit in assistance needs for National Guard members. The Ways and Means Committee included a budget note directing the Military Department to review issues concerning the state active duty rate and report its finding to the next legislature. Committee also discussed direction to the Oregon State Police to use $738,000 from fire insurance premium tax resources to pay for state fire marshal costs incurred during Conflagration Act fires in 2005 and 2006. Committee heard that the account ending balance is sufficient to pay for all current programs for both this biennium and the 2007-09 biennium and still retain an ending balance of $6.8 million, approximately two-thirds of all budgeted expenditures for the biennium. The Ways and Means Committee recommends passage of Senate Bill 5545A.
Further discussion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 5545. It is with some regret that I will be voting no on Senate Bill 5545 because there are some very worthwhile projects being funded. For example, 5545 provides additional funding to our judicial department to increase citizen access to our judicial system. It increases fire protection and firefighting operations. And it replenishes spent funds by our National Guard to help our fellow Americans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. It's unfortunate that we could not consider each of these supplemental requests individually and on their own merits. We should not be forced to support projects of questionable merit just because some in the bill are worthy of funding. Senate Bill 5545 is asking us to pay for increased litigation by the Department of Justice. It asks us to pay for new computers for the governor's office at a time when the governor is asking and seeking a 27% increase in his own office budget. And we're asked to make up for a Department of Higher Education accounting failure to the tune of $3 million. Colleagues, please join me in rejecting this pork barrel approach to budgeting and vote no on Senate Bill 5545. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you. And please accept my apology for not getting this question to you sooner, but I didn't pick up on it until I heard your opening comments. For the Department of Forestry, the subcommittee provided $300,000 general fund to pay for ongoing monitoring efforts and eradication treatments for the sudden oak death disease in Curry County. Can you tell us how much the Department of Forestry requested for the sudden oak death disease eradication efforts?
Approximately $580,000.
Follow up?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
Yeah. Yes.
She does.
Thank you. So, are there any plans to make up the other 200, and if I understood you correctly, it'd be $280-some thousand for this?
I was not at the discussions that occurred at that Ways and Means hearing, but the analyst tells me that the discussions were that there was a request in the 07-09 budget for the additional money, as we heard this morning in the subcommittee, in the Department of Forestry's budget. So that's why this amount was granted, since this is for the 05-07 budget, and that the Department of Forestry would request additional funding for sudden oak death in their future budget.
One last follow-up.
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
She
does.
Well, thank you for that. And so the $580,000 they requested was for this biennium, so we're still not fully funded in this biennium. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, to the measure?
To the bill. To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, some of you may not be familiar with this sudden oak death problem. I know that our colleagues from the coastal area, especially southern Oregon, are very familiar with this. We've been very fortunate in the state of Oregon so far that this disease has been limited for the most part to non-federal lands. And the issue is that if we don't eradicate this while it is still on non-federal lands and it gets onto the federal lands, we will absolutely, unequivocally lose control of this disease. And this disease will affect our nursery stock, our agricultural sector, our forest sector. It is a real problem. It's a firestorm that we can deal with on initial attack today, but we have to fully fund the eradication program. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I do not have a question for the carrier.
To the bill?
To the bill. Colleagues, on page 5 of 6, it refers to and talks about the Oregon Military Department. And particularly, it's referring to the emergency financial assistance, the tuition waivers, and the hunting and angling license reimbursements. And it showed that that last year we had about $350,000 that we put into that, but only about $68,000 of it was collected. And what I'm concerned about with this is that we had a bill to lower the qualifications so that more veterans could take advantage of this, and the department came in, ODF and W came in with a big fiscal on it. The problem that is that what we've given them isn't even being asked for. And I think there's two things that the department can do better, and I don't know if it's the military department or ODF and W that should be doing this, but one of them, and that is one is better outreach. ODF and W claimed that when we wanted to change the qualifications to a 10% disability, that their net loss of revenue would be $265,000. That's far less than the $350,000 that we had allocated last time around. And the other thing is to streamline the process. Right now, if a veteran wants to get any kind of a discount because of a disability on their hunting and fishing licenses, they have to go and buy the license, then they have to call the Oregon Military Department, and then they have to get a form sent to them. And then after they get the form sent to them, then they have to fill out the form, and then they have to send it back in, and then they have to wait about 3 months to see if their claim is going to be accepted or not. And if their claim is going to be accepted, then within maybe about 3 or 4 months later, they might get a check to reimburse them for the expense. Since this is an agency-to-agency process, I don't understand why that can't be streamlined. Why ODF and W can't take the information and then submit that over to the military department under this program and have the transfer funds be a direct transfer. And I think I'm losing something here, but I have a concern that we're taking away this much of a benefit and shifting those dollars into other areas. And maybe it's good that we're shifting it into more financial assistance since that was exhausted. But I just wanted to note that I do have a concern about this. The other thing is there's $128,000 that's being shifted back into the general fund, and just where is it going to go? Because there's not a point or a place noted for it. I just want to bring those concerns up, and I think that we do have the ability, we have the money that we can actually allow the veterans with a 10% disability and up to be able to get free hunting and fishing licenses. We could streamline the process, which would lower the fiscal impact. And I'm just kind of wondering why it is that we're not looking into that more. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move SB 5545A be referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Wisnant moves that Senate Bill 5545A be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I live in a beautiful part of the state, but the last 2 years we've been surrounded by forest fires. In this bill, there was no public input for $738,000 in fire insurance premium tax, which was removed from dedicated funds for fire programs to cover conflagration suppression costs. I need this. My people need this. It should have been discussed. We should have had input. This position is endorsed by the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, the Oregon Fire Marshals Association, Oregon Chapter 31 International Association of Arson Investigations, the Oregon AFSCME, Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association. This money needs to be restored. It needs to go back to Ways and Means.
Representative Galizia, you're in the privilege queue. For what purpose do you rise?
Well, I just not germane to the motion. The arguments, the claims about the content.
Representative, further discussion on the motion. Representative Dellum. Did you wish to be recognized, Representative Dellum? You were in the queue. Okay. Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the motion.
To the motion.
I think, colleagues, this would be a good thing to do because the truth is when you have a $45 million bill, it deserves to be broken down specifically by agency. And I'm hoping that the good chairs of Ways and Means will make that happen.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Madam Chair, this will be brief. I support the motion because I think that it's bad policy for our body to start doing what the federal government does when they have these omnibus bills that they put everything in and they don't have to vote on individual items. And so I would certainly support this motion for it to go back to Ways and Means so that we will vote on issues relating to funding on a per-issue basis.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnant, do you wish to close on your motion?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think we want to do the people's work and do this right. I think that comments have been made, and I would appreciate your support to refer it to the Ways and Means.
Those of the opinion that the motion should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Greenlick, how do you vote?
Aye.
Greenlick votes aye. Representative Greenlick, you're recognized. How do you vote? Representative Greenlick changes his vote from aye to nay. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Yes, Representative Greenlick.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to change my vote.
For what purpose do you
rise? I'd like to change my vote from yes to no, please.
Representative Greenlick changes his vote from aye to nay. And the motion, not having received the required majority, is declared failed. Further discussion on the bill. We're back on the bill. Further discussion. Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close?
I would, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I just want to note that it's standard practice to combine various agency appropriations into one supplemental bill. This is for the 05-07 biennium, the current biennium, not for the next biennium. Just want to clarify that. And I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 5545A.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Votes no. Senate Bill 5545A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to the order of business of consent calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And colleagues, we are now on the yellow sheet. You should have your yellow sheet in front of you. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 3089 be read the third time immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
House Bill 3089 relating to use of professional title by acupuncturists that authorizes persons who have completed certain doctoral programs in Oriental medicine acupuncture to use title Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3089A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett, off the floor. Representative Hannah, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3089A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bills 5015, 5027, 5029, 5041, 3303, and 3337 be read the third time immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 5015 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists and declaring an emergency.
question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5015A. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 5015 is the budget bill for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. The Board oversees a voluntary licensing program for individuals who want to use the title of Licensed Professional Counselor or Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist. The agency is funded by revenue generated from application and license fees. The Joint Ways and Committee, the Joint Ways and Means Committee approved an other funds budget of $637,338 and 2.5 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget increases a part-time position to full-time and provides a small increase to more closely align the in-state travel budget with actual spending. The committee also approved a current biennium other funds expenditure limitation of $100,000. The increase is needed to cover the increasing costs associated with disciplinary actions and the extraordinary use of temporary staff. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5015 as amended. And, Madam Speaker, I would simply remind the body that this is one of those many licensing boards which is funded entirely on with fees on those who are licensed with the board. The increases in costs this time came about as a result of the board carrying out its primary responsibility, which is the protection of the public. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? Representative Wisnant, votes aye. House Bill 5015A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5027, related to financial administration of the Oregon Health Licensing Agency and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5027A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 5027 is the budget bill for the Health Licensing Agency. The agency provides centralized regulatory oversight for 15 diverse professions, including cosmetology, midwifery, body piercing, and athletic trainers. The agency is funded by revenue generated from application, examination, and license fees. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved an other funds budget of $6 million and 31.4 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget includes five limited duration positions to allow the agency to pilot annual inspections. Increasing the frequency of inspections is expected to reduce the number and severity of violations and ease complaint workload. The agency will report the results of the pilot during their 2009 budget presentation. The approved budget also adds one permanent position to address increased licensing workload and provides for information technology initiatives to expand e-commerce services and improve database efficiency. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5027 as amended.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have one question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. My question revolves around the policy option package 201, the uniform fee structure. Can you tell me what the discussion in committee and subcommittee was with regards to uniform fee structure and why that was not approved?
Yes. We had a lengthy discussion about the uniform fee structure that was previously in place. The determination of the committee was that developing a fee structure based on the amount of effort and time required on the part of the Health Licensing Board made more sense, and that was the structure that was ultimately adopted.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I stand in opposition to this bill, particularly for the reason of policy option package 201. This is an agency that we created in 1999, and then over the course of 2001 and 2003, we gave them some additional responsibilities as far as how they are to administer and regulate the boards that they work with. And we actually gave the director of the department the authority to do all of the work. What's interesting is that in 2005, we approved House Bill 2103. And Section 3 of House Bill 2103 said the Oregon Health Licensing Agency is responsible for the administration and regulatory oversight of the boards, councils, and programs listed in ORS 676-606. The responsibilities of the agency include but are not limited to, and F is approving and collecting fees. Approving and collecting fees. Now, this is an agency that has a number of boards that they take care of. It's kind of an eclectic group. They have everything from body piercers and tattoo artists to athletic trainers and nurse midwives, and we have a whole spectrum of folks in between. This agency, at our behest, over the course of the last 8 years, was asked to try to come up with a way that they can do the work that they need to do, the regulating work that they do for all of these boards, and to do it in a uniform manner and to be able to charge a uniform fee. And now that they've actually made the proposal, they've come up with a way of being able to do it. They're saying, we're saying, nah, you know, I guess we were just kidding. We don't really want you to do that. They have demonstrated that a universal fee for all licensees under the board would be feasible, can be carried out, and we have a number of these licensees whose fees would actually go down. Now, I realize that that's an antithesis to government, that fees should actually go down. But we have the opportunity to be able to do that, and we're saying, no, we're just kidding. We don't want anybody's fees going down because, you know, government is not here to reduce fees. That's just not something that we can do. If we may need to raise fees, but we certainly don't want to be reducing fees. Now, what's interesting is that in a conversation that I had with a member of Ways and Means, there was an analogy that was used. And the analogy was, well, you know, if I were sick and went into the doctor and all I needed to have done was a throat swab to see if I had strep throat, then I should be charged one fee, what, $50, $100. But then if this other person that I was talking to needed to go into the doctor and needed an appendectomy, then, you know, would it be fair for us to be charged the same fee? The thing is, of course it wouldn't be fair to be charged the same fee because they're two separate procedures. One is a quick, easy throat swab. The other is a very involved surgical procedure. Of course you wouldn't charge the same fee. But it's the procedures that are different. It's not the training of the physicians. Well, the training of the physicians a little bit different, unless, of course, because there are some family docs out there that are surgeons that might do appendectomies. So their training is probably the same, but a surgically trained physician is a surgically trained physician. Now, they do have specialties. So in this case, it's the procedures of the licensing that's the same. And if there's an investigation that needs to be done, it's the procedures of the investigation that is going to be the same. So why can't a universal fee structure work for all of the licensees under the jurisdiction of this board? Just for the heck of it, I called the Board of Medical Examiners. Now, MDs and DOs have two different, they're different credentials, but they're both licensed by the Board of Medical Examiners, as are DPMs, Doctors of Podiatric Medicine. MDs and DOs pay an initial fee of $375. It's the same fee. And per biennium, they pay $438. It's the same fee. Two different credentials. But they pay the same
Representative Garrard
fee.
Yields.
Thank you, Representative. Doctors of podiatric medicine have a real similar credential, but not quite the same. Pay a little bit less in their initial application fee of $340, but they pay $438 per biennium for their license. Now, that's a different credential. It's a surgical credential. It's a medical credential. But they work on feet. And they are allowed to work up to just below the knee by our state practicing laws. MDs, they can work on anything. DOs, they can work on anything. But it still is a different credential because DOs are trained more in physical medicine than MDs are, and they use osteopathic manipulation. And generally, MDs don't use osteopathic manipulation. So there is some difference in the training. There is some difference in the credential. But they pay the same fees. Funny how that works. We had the opportunity to lower a lot of practitioners' fees in this bill. And ladies and gentlemen, we blew it because we didn't actually lower those fees. The fees, by the way, would have been about $21 per licensee. Nurse midwives today pay $1,500 a year. Nurse midwives have a voluntary registration act, and compliance isn't real high. You know, I wonder why the compliance isn't real high. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that it's probably because the fee is so high. And if we were to lower that fee, I'll bet you that we would have an increased compliance of nurse midwives voluntarily being regulated and overlooked with what they're doing by this agency. And maybe one of the things we need to do is make nurse midwives mandatory regulation and not voluntary regulation. If we make them mandatory, then we really owe it to them to lower their fees. We had the opportunity to do it, and we didn't take advantage of that. And you know what? It really ticks me off. It really ticks me off. We had the opportunity to lower some fees for some people, and we didn't take advantage of it. So for those reasons, and that reason alone, I'm going to vote against this bill, and I hope that you'll join me in it. And if we can make the bill fail here on the floor, send it back, get it back to committee, maybe we can fix that. Uniform fee structure in this particular case is the way to go. And Madam Speaker, in closing, I'm going to declare a potential conflict of interest because I am qualified to be licensed, although I'm not currently, but I am qualified to be licensed by one of the boards that is overseen by the Oregon Health Licensing Agency.
Representative Crummell declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Madam Chair. I appreciate the good representative from Wilsonville's comments, and I'd like to respond to them in short. There are three primary reasons why we did not adopt a uniform fee structure. First of all, the authorizing statute mandated centralized administration, but not a uniform fee structure. Secondly, Oregon statute expressly prohibits subsidizing one fee for with another. Because of the in other words, if we would adopt a uniform fee structure in this case, because of the extra time and effort required for one profession versus another, we would have essentially subsidized the lower fee for one of the professions with a higher fee for the other. Thirdly, is the diversity of the professions under the jurisdiction of the Health Licensing Board. It was the position of the Legislative Fiscal Office that the allocation of the agency's operating cost to each profession should reflect the level of regulatory oversight required, and that the fees for each profession should be set to generate sufficient revenue to recover those particular costs. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative, all members have voted. House Bill 5027A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5029, relating to financial administration of specified boards and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5029A. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 5029 is the budget bill for 8 health-related licensing boards. The Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians, State Mortuary and Cemetery Board, Board of Naturopathic Examiners, Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators, Occupational Therapy Licensing Board, Board of Radiologic Technology, State Board of Examiners of Speech, Language Pathology and Audiology, and Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The boards regulate their respective professions through licensing and disciplinary programs and are funded by revenue generated from application, examination, and licensing fees. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved in aggregate an other funds budget of $3.4 million and 16.12 full-time equivalent positions. The approved budget is 1.3% less than the essential budget level. The budgets for the Mortuary and Cemetery Board and the Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators were reduced in response to revenue shortfalls. These agencies may return during the interim with fee proposals to restore the reductions. The committee also approved a current biennium other funds expenditure limitation of $17,000 for the Board of Examiners of Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. This increase is needed to cover increased costs associated with disciplinary cases. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5029 as amended. And, Mr. Speaker, I would simply note that the additional expenditure is, again, related to the primary function of these boards, and that is the protection of the public. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Representative Dallum is an aye. House Bill 5029A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5041, relating to financial administration of the Department of Revenue, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5041A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5041A is the budget bill for the Department of Revenue. The department is responsible for the consistent application of property tax assessments and administration and enforcement of Oregon income and cigarette and other tobacco taxes. The Joint Ways and Means Committee approved a budget of $181 million, $148.5 million general fund, and $32.5 million other fund. The total fund budget is 2.6% above the department's essential budget level. The committee approved two enhancements to the department's budget to help improve operating efficiencies and one to improve administration of refundable tax credits. Enhancements for the operating efficiencies included funding to lease. New check receipt and deposit processing equipment and for imaging of income tax returns. We approved 4 positions dedicated to the reviewing and processing refundable tax credits and to work with those involved with the credits to improve accuracy and completeness of necessary documentation for the credits. We also approved continued other funds for the administration and enforcement activities related to cigarette and other tobacco taxes. The committee also reviewed the agency's performance measures. We directed the department to revise its performance measure 4 on consumer contacts to provide a more outcome-oriented target. We approved the department's other performance measures included in the budget report. We discussed the potential for a performance measure related to closing the tax gap, but agreed that the objective analysis of the tax gap is needed first. We believed a task force or interim committee to be staffed by the Legislative Revenue Office could provide that objective analysis and encourage the assembly to consider that for the interim work. I recommend the approval of House Bill 5041A.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion that House Bill 5041A should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 5041A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3303, relating to island annexation.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3303A. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3303A comes to you from the Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources with a unanimous vote for a do-pass recommendation. Earlier today, we had what Representative Crummell described as the sour grapes annexation bill. This bill is the why don't I get to vote on my property when everybody else in the city gets to vote on my property bill. And the way the bill works, it says if the city already on their own is requiring an election through charter or ordinance or resolution, let the person in the county whose home you're voting on also vote in that election. So we're trying to give people a voice in their own property while the election is going on in the city. Thank you, colleagues. I recommend it pass.
Further discussion, Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as you can see, this is a really, really simple bill. It's Democracy 101. We cannot stand for continued annexation without representation. Let them vote. It's a great bill. I urge your support.
Representative Cameron.
Question for the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Reluctantly, but yes.
He does.
Representative, I just want to know if my dog is registered. Does it count as a vote?
Thank you, Representative. If your dog is an elector in the county, then the dog would be able to vote. I suspect that they're not, but thank you.
Further discussion?
You should have got me back.
Seeing none.
Let me live at the restaurant.
Representative Clem, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those opinion the bill should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Scott, how do you vote? Scott votes no. Representative David Edwards votes aye. And Representative Galizio? Galizio votes no. Representative Berger, for what purpose do you rise?
Speaker, I'd like to change my vote from nay to aye.
Representative Berger changes her vote from nay to aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? You're registered now. Okay. And Jensen is registered. We're all set. House Bill 3303A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3337, relating to land use for urban growth boundary.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3337A. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3337 comes to you out of the Ag and Natural Resources Committee. What the bill does, it is limited to the cities of Eugene and Springfield, which have voluntarily formed a common metropolitan urban growth boundary. It allows the two cities to individually plan for meeting residential growth needs within their section of the metropolitan, the urban growth boundary. And we are split by Interstate 5. And any plans that they independently make must meet all state planning goals. It puts Eugene and Springfield on the same basis for planning purposes as the other seven smaller cities in Lane County, or elsewhere in Oregon for that matter. Lane County government would continue to have a role in planning as it does with the other cities. It does not allow either Eugene or Springfield to delay or veto in any manner the other city's self-determination, and it requires both cities to conduct a residential land study within 2 years to determine whether they are in compliance with the state land use goal of having a 20-year residential land supply. The reason I introduced this bill is that Springfield's elected leaders, including myself, have a real concern that we are pricing young working families out of home ownership. Prices for lots in Springfield have climbed to over $100,000 for a standard city lot because of the scarcity of residential land. Springfield has been working to develop and reuse infill land within the city. The city already has a very high proportion of its population in multifamily housing, higher than in Eugene, and the community has put a high value on promoting family home ownership. Eugene has a different philosophy about housing. They are supporting much higher density housing. Springfield has been trying for many years to get Eugene engaged in updating the metro residential land supply, and Eugene has been reluctant to do so for fear that it will reveal a lack of residential land supply in conflict with statewide housing goals. The metropolitan residential land supply was last updated in 95, and we have experienced considerable development since that inventory. I strongly believe that our state policy should encourage local control within the broader context of our adopted statewide planning goals. The bill supports that belief and allows the elected leadership of both cities to respond to their constituency and plan for the community they desire without making similar decisions about their neighbor. A few things that have been quoted, I'm going to quote a few people. Springfield Mayor Sid Likens said, under House Bill 3337, both Eugene and Springfield can develop, monitor, and maintain their own inventories, but would otherwise retain all other regional planning activities and commitments contained in the adopted metro plan. The Eugene Register Guard editorialized, signs of land shortage are easy to find. The biggest residential developments in Lane County are rising outside of the metro area. And the Eugene Chamber of Commerce says, we think this bill is a good step in the right direction to ensure that cities have the buildable land inventory data they need in order to make good planning decisions for themselves and for the metro area as a whole. There have been a few, some opposition from the city of Eugene, and one of the opposition statements was that it severely limits self-governance. This is wrong. The bill actually allows both cities to determine their own housing directions within state goals. They've said House Bill 3377 is brought not by the sponsor but by the Home Builders Association. Wrong. I sponsored this bill out of a personal concern for lack of affordable housing for young families and at the request of the Springfield City Council. I believe the local home builders are supporting this bill for the simple reason that they are fully aware of the lack of opportunities for home ownership because of the extremely limited land supply. This is a good planning bill that supports local control within our established statewide goals. It promotes the kind of self-determination that we should all support. In thinking about this bill, ask yourself this question. Should the City Commission of Portland be empowered to determine the land use plans in Salem? Or should the Klamath Falls City Council set the housing plans for Hillsborough? Should Newport decide what is right for Baker City? I will tell you that these communities are different, just as Eugene and Springfield is. Just because we share a boundary does not mean that we share the same goals and the same aspirations for our communities. Self-determination is the right answer for every city in Oregon. It is the right answer for Springfield and Eugene, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Mr. Chair, or Mr. Speaker, excuse me. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you, good representative. I was wondering if you could tell me if the Department of Land Conservation and Development testified in committee, and did they take a position on splitting up this urban growth boundary that Eugene and Springfield share?
Yes, representative from the Emerald City. They did testify, and they certainly did not love the idea of splitting up Eugene and Springfield. And I will say they did support the piece of the bill that would require the use, the land use inventories.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to this bill. Eugene and Springfield have long shared a metro plan, and they share a wastewater treatment plant. They share a great deal of planning together, because what happens in one city affects the other in a lot of different respects. And the city of Eugene is in compliance with state laws for buildable lands inventory. And this bill will become an unfunded mandate for them to initiate a new inventory within 2 years. They are already in compliance, and I think this is really a bad policy for cities like this that share a metro planning committee, and they share this UGB. They really have to plan together for the future. And although I recognize the frustrations, perhaps, of Springfield with the availability of buildable land, I think there's a process for them to petition to enlarge their urban growth boundary within the Metropolitan Planning Committee. And I just think this is bad policy. I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I represent North Eugene.
To the bill.
Oh, to the bill. I represent North Eugene, and I have some experience having served on a planning commission and city council for some years. I'm going to vote no on this bill, but after you hear my remarks, you may wonder why I decided to vote no. It was difficult, and it's in with some reluctance. With this bill, my friend, the good representative from Springfield, makes some very good points, and I concur with some of her analysis of statements that have been made. I don't happen to agree with Eugene's recent decision on a split vote to forego doing a study, an analysis of available land for residential, commercial, and industrial purposes. A 20-year supply of land wasn't available in the area several years ago, and since that time, in the meanwhile, we certainly have not added any land, so the shortage or the time till expanding and needing to look toward an adequate supply, it has gotten even more critical. This issue just isn't just about housing. This is also about an availability of commercial and industrial supply. Industrial lands, some people have concluded, is probably also at a severe shortage, and we know the need to connect the availability of room for jobs as well as room for people to live. The need for updated, reliable information is acute to make better informed local decisions. Those decisions, however, affect not only the local jurisdiction where the decisions are being made, they directly impact land use patterns, development patterns in neighboring jurisdictions, and they have a direct impact on commuting and a direct impact on the transportation infrastructure. There's a lot of reasons why Eugene should have gone ahead with an updated land supply study. Several of the supporters of this measure have written to me, and I agree with their need for an updated land supply, but this bill doesn't solve that problem. This bill doesn't get Eugene to do an updated land supply. The people who wrote to me or spoke with me in support of this argued for the need of that updated supply and making better decisions, but they did not argue about the benefits of a split urban boundary. They did not argue about splitting what is functionally a single metropolitan area. On balance, there is always the need to recognize the interests in livable communities and in a healthy economy. And that balance on the Springfield side of Interstate 5 is often somewhat different than the balance than you see on the Eugene side of Interstate 5. There's also a noticeable difference north and south of the Willamette River in the way Eugene citizens feel about how to solve and address those problems. This bill just isn't the best solution. It does not solve half of the problem. It's not forcing Eugene into coming up with that updated supply. We have heard that Eugene is in compliance. The way I look at it, Eugene is barely in compliance. It's basically on a technical issue that they're in compliance. It's almost a fluke that Eugene has 7 years more to go before they have to do another analysis. Ideally, DLCD would have found a way to require Eugene to update its plan. That didn't happen. The next best solution would have been for DLCD. That would have been the way to avoid the necessity of my good friend, the representative from Springfield, bringing this bill to us. Since that didn't happen, ideally the best solution would have been for DLCD to require it now. DLCD has not done that. The next best solution would have been to find a way for the legislature to give DLCD the authority or the tools they need to solve that problem. That's not what we're being asked to do. We're being asked basically to split a metropolitan area in two. We're not being asked to solve the problem of the buildable lands analysis. It's bad policy to ignore the need for accurate information. It's bad policy to delay complying with reasonable rules, but it's also bad policy to ignore the value of comprehensive planning as a single metropolitan area. If there was a way that I could help get this supply analysis done for the city of Eugene, I will help find that solution. That hasn't been proposed to us, but I do make that commitment. If there's a way to get that done or to force it to be done, my energy is there. But on balance, because this isn't the right solution,
Representative Bonamici yields.
Thank you, Representative. On balance, I'm going to vote no, but it's reluctantly, because I believe that the decisions are critical to have that analysis done soon.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? She does.
Will this bill facilitate Springfield's interest in annexing Eugene?
Well, it certainly won't hurt.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Most welcome. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Byer, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I guess as a follow-up to that question, we are certainly doing it one homeowner and one business at a time. I do want to comment on the fact that we in the Eugene-Springfield area do have a very long history of planning. We started in the 80s, and actually the 50s, to do joint planning. Our plan was one of the first plans adopted in the state. We still do our Metropolitan Wastewater Commission. We have one joint commission, which Eugene and Springfield share operation and management of. We have a single regional transportation plan that's overseen by Springfield, Eugene, Lane County, Coburg, and Lane Transit District. We still have a single public facilities and services plan adopted by Springfield, Eugene, and Lane County and the elected boards of our local utility providers. We share a single air protection agency and an MPO comprised of 12 cities, Lane County and others. So our intent is to continue sharing management and sharing planning with our Eugene neighbor. But this bill could save the marriage by giving each partner the right to define its own UGB. It would also require each city to do the homework to prove up under the current state standards for having a 20-year supply of residential lands. And that, my friends, leads me to ask you to support this bill.
Those of your opinion, the bill should pass. Vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 3337A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials, no. Chair asks unanimous consent to temporary return to the order of propositions and motions. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in consideration of Senate Bill 400 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, May 8, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in consideration of Senate Joint Resolution 26 be made a special order of business at 10 a.m. Tuesday, May 8, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Joint Resolution 15 and House Joint Resolution 31 be read immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the first resolution.
H.J.R. 15, encouraging governor to designate state ambassadors.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Resolution 15. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Oregon is one of the premier trading states in the United States. And
it's colleagues, there is a lot of conversation on the floor. If folks could consider taking that to the side aisles or to the out in the lobby, be helpful. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I say, this bill would be good for Oregon's trade process in the entire East and also in other areas. Personal relationships are extremely important in trade, and you know, this bill will allow us to move into the future in a much better trade position. This simply requests that the governor appoint trade ambassadors to our trading partners and that he reimburse them for their actual expenses. It's a good bill. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? See none, Representative Riley. If you wish to close.
Briefly, Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to let folks know that I'm volunteering to be the ambassador to Ireland.
Those are the opinion that Representative Riley should be an ambassador. those are the opinion that House Joint Resolution 15 should be adopted. Will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Joint Resolution 15, having received a constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Representative Lim, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to declare the conflict of interest on the bill just passed, SJR 15.
Please state your conflict for the record.
I might be interested in being a trade ambassador. That's why I want to clear the conflict.
Your potential conflict is duly noted.
Thank you.
Clerk, read the next resolution.
HGR 31, proposing amendment to our constitution relating to redistricting.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption. House Joint Resolution 31, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. HGR 31 comes to you from your Committee on Election Ethics and Rules. This is a change in the way that redistricting, not the way redistricting is done, but the way redistricting is implemented. Currently, we have a very strange process in Oregon where for the congressional districts, a person is elected to a two-year term, they serve a two-year term representing that district, then they are elected to a redistricted district and serve a two-year term representing that. For legislative districts, it's not the same way. I will give you an example. My good friend from Central Lane and Linn counties was originally represented to a district in Eugene. Then redistricting took place. And because he was thrown in with another representative, he was assigned for 1 year to represent the district now represented by the good representative from Oregon's Lakes District, which is Representative Gilman. So, and then at the end of that year, he was able to run in the new district and now represents Central Lane and Linn counties. So let me just get this image in your mind. Representative Barnhart for that year represented Prineville, Paisley, Eastern Jackson County. Now, I know firsthand, having listened to him, he really appreciated the opportunity to represent them. I'm not sure they appreciated the opportunity to be represented by him as much. So this change would say to voters, you elect somebody to 2 years, you get them to represent you for the full 2 years. Then the redistricting process would play out as it does already, but the new district would not take effect until the start of the next term. So you would serve your district for the whole 2 years, you would then be elected or not into a new district and would serve that district for a full 2 year term. This is the way most states do it already. This is the way we already do it for congressional districts. This is a way to make sure that you're not end up representing three different districts over the course of a three-year period. And frankly, most importantly, to make sure that constituents have the opportunity to elect somebody to a term and to have that person serve them for the whole two-year term. I urge your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hunt, do you wish to close?
I do not.
Those opinion the House Joint Resolution 31 be approved, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote?
Aye.
He votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Joint Resolution. Representative Burley, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Joint Resolution 31, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading and Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5547 relating to State Financial Administration appropriated money declared an emergency. Senate Bill 73 relating to payment for collection of signatures on election documents. Senate Bill 100 relating to Oregon State Fair account.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading and Senate bills.
Senate Bill 77 relating to elections and declaring an emergency.
Bill read second time is passed the third reading. Third reading and Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 77 be read third time immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the first bill.
Senate Bill 77 relating to elections and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 77A. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a technical fix bill. You'll see a whole series of changes in here. It comes from the Secretary of State. Makes a whole series of technical changes related to how nominating petitions are processed, whether they have to be the declination of nominations have to be signed by notary publics, whether resignations need to be made in writing, a whole variety of changes like that are really all technical fixes. The one more substantive change you will note comes in that it allows a county ordinance that changes the number or mode of selection of county officers to be voted on in an election held in November of an odd-numbered year. Now, what does that mean? That means, for those of us who are from Clackamas County, right now our county is going through a process of looking at the possibility of expanding the number of commissioners that we have in our county commissioners from the current three to a greater number, I guess. They're looking at a whole range of options. There's a task force that's going through that process. But one of the problems they realized is that under current state statute, they may only send that recommendation to the voters in November of a general election year, meaning that there wouldn't be an opportunity for voters to get it in November of this year. This bill doesn't change, doesn't take any position on whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, doesn't leaves that issue to the voters. It just allows the question to be put for Clackamas County or any other county that wanted to do it on the November 07 ballot. So voters can then have a say. Beyond that, the changes are technical in nature, and I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, thank you, colleagues. On to the bill.
To the bill.
This bill I had a couple questions on, and I still have an outstanding question. I will be supporting the bill, but I had a question about the fact that you would be able to request an absentee ballot via email, and I was a little concerned about what if there was a breakdown in communication, what if there's, what are the penalties, just some questions around that issue, but I will be supporting the bill, and I encourage you to vote yes to.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hunt, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Morgan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? She votes aye. And Representative Dingfelder votes aye. Senate Bill 77A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Colleagues, we did get a lot of bills accomplished today. Tomorrow we will have just two bills up before us, but then on Monday we'll have more than 30 bills on the agenda again. Are there further announcements? Remonstrances. Oops, just a moment. We do have an announcement. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, a reminder that there will be a 9:30 a.m. caucus meeting tomorrow.
Additional announcements? Representative Flores.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. I punched in for remonstrances.
Okay. Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Crummell be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 5512. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt asks for unanimous consent to allow Representative Crummell to change his vote on Senate Bill 5512. It will not change the outcome. Is there an objection? Hearing none, Representative Crummell, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Representative Crummell changes his vote from no to aye. Are there further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today we spent over $10 million out of the general fund on a wide variety of agencies and boards. Was the K-12 budget on the floor today? No. Was the state police budget on the floor today? No. I will ask the question I did yesterday, why are we here? We need to fund the core functions of government and go home. Also today, we passed another bill to crack down on businesses that, incidentally, provide for desperate times for desperate people. But that aside, instead, we should be talking about fully funding the budget for Oregon Project Independence, to help our seniors, and we should be talking about a comprehensive plan to help elderly and low-income tenants getting kicked out of mobile home parks. Shouldn't we be dealing with establishing our K-12 and higher ed budgets, protecting our vulnerable populations, providing for public safety, and going home?
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Many of you know that in the last legislative session in 2005, we passed a very important piece of legislation, which was to make sure that we had a way of being able to find sex offenders. And we can now find the sex offenders on the Internet. You know, the Internet, one of the comments that was made during the hearings of that bill in 2005 was that the sex offenders use the Internet to find their victims. Maybe it's time we use the Internet to find them. And we can do that now. Because the Oregon State Police has that up. We had a variety of other bills to add to this, and one of them was to a task force that would allow us to be following, that have the task force following the Adam Walsh Act and the rule implementation by the federal government, so that then we as a state would be able to do the same thing and be in line with where the feds are. Utah has decided that they're taking the bull by the horns. They've implemented it. They're not being slow about it. We have some other states, Wisconsin, the one is making license plates of sex offenders stand out so that you know where they are. We have other states that are taking the bull by the horns here, and Oregon is just sort of languishing. And I find it very disappointing that the bills that were in judiciary were not allowed even to have a hearing, much less move. And I think that it's really a shame that we aren't going after these people that are going after our kids.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Friday, May 4th, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, May 4th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, May 4th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.